Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Manual Therapy Forum. Right now, today, we are going to hear from Ken Olson. For those of you who don't know who Ken Olson is, he is a physical therapist that practices out of Illinois. But if you're in the manual therapy world, you've probably heard about him through a couple organizations. One is the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists, and the other is IFOMP, the International Federation of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. IFOMP is the world organization that basically, I wouldn't say governs, but has members throughout a number of different countries where they help to, govern may be a right word, just issues related to manual therapy. Standards, certain standards that all countries can meet, about education and training and a whole bunch of other things. And Ken is currently the president of that organization. He is the past president of the AAOMPT and has been heavily involved with both for many, many years, as you'll get to hear. Because of that, Ken is really a good resource for a number of different things related to practice issues regarding manual therapy here in the United States and even the world, really. But he's like I was saying before, a very good clinician. He has a lot of genuine advice related to patient care that I think we haven't really heard before from some of the other guests on our podcast. So keep a lookout for those and listen in for those. That'll be nice to hear from him about particular issues. The other thing to note about Ken is he's also an author. He is the author of a book called Manual Physical Therapy of the Spine, and it's currently out in its second edition, which was published back in 2015. And Ken may be working on a new edition. I can't remember if he mentioned it during the podcast or not, but that is a possibility. It's a wonderful resource. Ken tries to be very eclectic in his approach, even though his training has in the past been predominantly through Stanley Paris and that organization. But he definitely incorporates things he's learned over the years from other groups or other individuals. And it's, like I said, it's a very good resource for anybody out there that wants to learn more about particular manual therapy as it relates to the spine. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Ken Olson. He's a great guy and gives us a lot of nice things to think about when we're treating our patients and just being good manual therapy clinicians in general. So without further ado, here we are. Well, Ken, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thanks for having me on your program.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, usually we start off with asking everyone that we talk to just giving us a little brief intro about yourself. And you can start professionally if you like to, but I also like to know a little bit about kind of where you're from, where you grew up, and you know what life was like for you when you were younger.
All right. Well, I live in Sycamore, Illinois, which is kind of the north central part of Illinois, and I'm in private practice. So the majority of my day is treating patients. I'm part of a private practice group where there's three other partners, and we have five clinics in this northern Illinois area. And then I do a little bit of teaching with Northern Illinois University, which actually the PT program is just right across the street from my clinic, so that makes it pretty convenient.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I spend the majority of my time. But then I'm also involved with some professional association activities, primarily as president of IFOMP. So that takes a bit of time as well. But I actually, kind of where I'm from is I actually grew up in a small town just about 10 miles from here. So even though I moved away for a period of time, I've kind of come back home and raised my family right here in the same general vicinity where I grew up.
Oh, cool. So since you're living really close to where you grew up, how did you first get interested in physical therapy, when you were maybe even high school or younger?
Yeah, well, I was, I think I was about 15 years old or so, and I had a brother who was a year older than me who was a really good athlete, and he injured his knee and went to a physical therapist and rehab and was able to get back into playing basketball. And so, you know, I was just kind of looking for something, you know, do with the rest of my life. And I thought, oh, physical therapy looks kind of interesting. And actually, the therapist he went to is the guy that I ended up becoming business partners with eventually in private practice. And so I went to Northern Illinois University because they had a PT program. It actually was a little too close to home, but you know, I kind of made that work and it was able to get into the program. And so I think I graduated in 1988 from there, from the PT program with a bachelor's degree back in those days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was life like for you, you know, as a new grad? Did you have any particular exposure to manual therapy in your program, or is that something that you thought about later on in life?
We had a little bit of an introduction to it, in the entry level program. I believe our orthopedic instructor, had maybe been to a Stanley Paris course and sort of mentioned the name and showed us a few of those techniques. I thought, well, this really looks very interesting. And, maybe I should pursue this a little bit more. So I just really had an interest in improving my clinical skills. Cause really when I came out, with a bachelor's degree, I felt like I was very competent as an acute care physical therapist. Mm-hmm. And I was a little shaky with anything to do with outpatient orthopedics, but yet that's really what I wanted to do. So the first job I took was in acute care hospital. But with the promise that I could rotate into the outpatient orthopedic setting, you know, within a year or so. So I was able to start getting a little bit of experience with that. And actually in that first position, they sent me to the S1 course, you know, Stanley Paris's S1, which back in those days was, I think it was 9 days. So it was, you know, pretty long, extensive course, but you know, part of the reason I was interested in it was because the course was offered in a town where this girl I was dating was living. And so she was going to grad school there. And I thought, well, that'd be great. You know, I can kind of hang out with her and take this 9-day course. And what I really liked about the course, I ended up marrying the girl. So that all worked out. But, you know, what I really liked about the approach was that it just really, it was very logical and very organized and really help, you know, kind of put, you know, a little bit more organized context to how to go about approaching complex patients. And, you know, I was not so sure how to do that, you know, 6 months out of PT school. So I just really like that, logical, organizational, problem solving sort of approach, you know, that I learned with that first S1 course.
Okay. So you took S1, and at that time, that was a 9-day course, you said?
Yeah. So it was kind of a marathon.
That's not something I don't think newer grads nowadays are used to taking or can even think about.
No, not really. Yeah. So then about a year later, I took the S3 course, and which is the cervical spine course through University of St. Augustine. And by then, I actually had moved back to Illinois, because actually my first job was in Kentucky, in Lexington, Kentucky. But I moved back to Illinois ended up getting married. So that all worked out. But then, you know, started thinking about maybe going back to school, because I thought, well, if I really want to get good at outpatient orthopedics, in those days you would go on and get a master's degree in orthopedic physical therapy. So I started looking at various programs and had the opportunity to take an S3 course, the cervical spine course from Stanley Paris. And back in those days, he used to move to Vail, Colorado for a month and put on a series of courses. And so they would organize the course so that you could go to class early in the morning, and then you'd ski throughout the midday, and then you'd go back to class in the evening. And they would take like a 4-day course and turn it into a 5 or 6-day course, so that they'd spread it out a little bit.
Nice.
So I had a chance to actually take a course from Stanley. And, you know, was really impressed. And then, like I said, I kind of went into it thinking I was sort of looking at the master's degree program. So, and it turned out that he had just taken his program from Atlanta to St. Augustine and was sort of setting it up as more of a distance education master's degree program. So I asked the question, you know, at the end of the day, one of the days of the course, he was explaining the new master's degree program in orthopedic physical therapy that he had set up in St. Augustine. And, so I asked if there were any, clinics in St. Augustine that would be willing to hire a therapist and then help put him through, his program. And he said, well, I'm actually looking for a physical therapist. Why don't you talk to me after class? So then I had a, you know, so there I am in my flannel shirt and jeans getting, you know, at a ski resort and, had an interview with Stanley Paris, you know, so it went pretty well. And then I met his wife, Catherine, who also worked in the clinic there in St. Augustine as a physical therapist, one of the instructors. It all worked out and they invited me to come down to St. Augustine, you know, so I made that move, about 3 or 4 months later and worked in a clinic, which actually was an outpatient clinic connected with a small hospital there in St. Augustine. And the university was just basically in a room above the clinic. So where they were offering continuing education courses and had a library and some offices up there. So I guess that was 1990. Yeah, I think it was like the spring of 90. And so I ended up staying in St. Augustine for almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. Because they were kind of just developing the master's program as I was going through it, you know, so I was kind of the guinea pig for everything. And they were also kind of developing a residency and fellowship program as I was going through it. So I was sort of the first, and then there were one or two others who came along shortly after me. About a year later, Elaine Lahneman came into the program. And so she and I were working in the clinic together, who's now, you know, now she's the president of AAMP. And another therapist a year after that came from Belgium, Alex Stenhouse. So the three of us kind of went through it together. But it was a great learning experience. We were working in the clinic with Stanley and his wife, Catherine, and, as people, as instructors would come from all over to come and teach courses. And so we had an opportunity to meet some of those people, you know, some of the, like David Lamb would come and teach the thrust course every year. Oh,
yeah.
And later, Laurie Hartman would come and teach thrust course. And so we'd get to take a lot of the courses, but even if we couldn't take them, we'd at least be able to go out for a drink afterward with them and kind of socialize with those guys, you know. Cliff Fowler would stop by, you know, people like that. So it was pretty unique opportunity, you know. So, and every time there was a class in town, Stanley oftentimes would have the class to his home for dinner, and so he'd invite me and Elaine to come. And oftentimes we'd end up tending bar or, you know, kind of helping out, you know, with the party a little bit, but. Again, I met therapists from all over the world during that 3 or 4 years. So it was really kind of turned me on to not only, you know, trying to improve my clinical skills, but also just that, you know, the excitement of building that network of, you know, people passionate about the field and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's pretty special, I think. All the different people that you got exposed to at a relatively young age in your, or young time in your career, and what kind of impact that they have on you. As you were talking, I was thinking, you mentioned your first course that you took with University of St. Augustine or even Stanley Paris, how impressed you were with the organization and the other things. But when you actually got to take that course, that one course with Stanley Paris, at that time in your career, what was it about either what he taught or the way he taught or just him as an individual, what was it about him that impressed you or kind of got your attention, you know, more than other things, I guess?
I think That's a good question. I mean, it was the whole package really that I was sort of attracted to. I mean, like I said, just the philosophy of sort of breaking down the problems and using good, you know, clinical reasoning and problem solving skills. So that was great. But then, you know, Stanley himself, you know, is a very charismatic person, and but you know, personable, and also just sort of, you know, I think the passion for the profession and to be an advocate for the profession, I think that really kind of drew me to, you know, to want to get closer and learn more and see, you know, see how I could kind of be a part of that, you know, sort of try to work my way into the inner circle, you know, so to speak, of not, you know, his teachers and his network and, you know, kind of all the excitement around just sort of moving the profession forward, you know? So I think that part of it, you know, kind of sort of drew me in, so to speak. I kind of found that he and I had some similarities in personality traits, you know, not everything, but, you know, certain things about just being able to focus and work towards a goal. And, you know, and then he helped kind of teach me and sort of the other students going through the residency some basic leadership skills, you know, that I think have helped us, you know, just some of the coursework was things like learning Robert's Rules of Order, you know, which a lot of physical therapists are just don't know their way around that. So, you know, just teaching us how to run a meeting, how to debate, you know, what we would have. And part of that was to get involved professionally, but also part of it was he would play the part of the dominant orthopedic surgeon. We'd have to, you know, play the role of the young physical therapist coming up and explaining, you know, how we may not agree necessarily with his diagnosis, or we, you know, sort of what our treatment plan is going to be able to kind of, you know, elevate ourselves as professionals, you know? So he was, you know, kind of a sort of blazing the trail on that rather than, you know, just, you know, letting us just sit back and, you know, be the technician, you know, which so many physical therapists were practicing that way in those days. So, yeah. So yeah, it was all of that, I think, you know, that kind of drew me in and motivated me to, you know, kind of stick with the program, you know. And, you know, and being the first was not necessarily easy because they were still kind of getting the whole program organized, but it was, you know, it was kind of, so it took a little longer, you know. I was there 4 years. I had a 4 year residency, basically.
there's good and bad with that, right?
Right. I was really mentored, but, you know, maybe I was a slow learner, but, you know, some of it was just because everything was new, you know. But I think I got a lot more out of it too. You know, I got a tremendous amount of mentoring, you know.
Yeah.
And then Trish King came on board faculty about halfway through. After I was there about a year and a half, she came to St. Augustine, and she had an academic background from University of Tennessee in Memphis, and was able to kind of give a little bit more structure to the master's program and really kind of help me put together an academic plan to really see it through and get it done, you know, because, I owe a great deal to Trish for, you know, kind of her role of coming on board and giving more structure to the program. And then when she got there, the program really started to build, you know, 'cause they were really ahead of the game in terms of the distance education model, you know, and trying to be innovative in how they were going to use that, and still, provide, you know, the skilled hands-on, you know, seminars, you know, still work on the clinical skills and the mentoring with that, but then be able to do the coursework before and after, the actual, you know, intensive, you know, they would call it now. So that was, you know, a model they were developing in the early 90s, you know, and then we're able to put more things online, you know. And so I eventually, you know, so basically 4 years there, and then I came back to Illinois. And then after a couple of years of working here and started to do some more teaching also, then I went back for my Doctor of Health Science degree through University of St. Augustine. And by then things really were online, you know, and was able to do it from a distance, and they, you know, in the program grew, you know, so they, and when I was there, they were also just starting to plan the entry level DPT program, because they, that was not really going yet. But so that was kind of interesting too, to see just kind of building a program from the ground up as a new entry level program, and some of the innovative ideas they had for how to make that really work. And obviously that's now expanded to multiple campuses, and there's thousands of graduates, you know, but you know, but I was sort of like, when I graduated, I was one person in my class.
Wow. That's so cool to hear.
Yeah. So it's, so it's been interesting to see that grow.
So along the way, I mean, that obviously was a huge impact and huge influence on you as a professional and even personally, I'm sure. Have you had any other big mentors along the way?
Well, when I, one of the really neat projects I got to do as part of my master's degree was, I was interested in the TMJ, you know, and there, we had an oral surgeon move it to St. Augustine, and nobody really within the clinic was really specializing in that. And so he was started sending us some patients. So I volunteered to, you know, learn more. So I was able to take some classes from Steve Krause and take a whole series of courses from Mario Narracabato. So those guys were good clinical mentors, and, you know, I had an opportunity to learn from them. And then I had brought that information back to St. Augustine, and then was able to actually put on a course or develop a course on the TMJ for the other graduate students. You know, so worked with Trish King in particular, just to learn how to structure a course, you know, how to write course objectives, and how to, you know, Stanley helped me with how to put together slides. And, you know, back then we had to actually use a camera to make our slides. So, you actually used a mounting device, you know, you put the camera, mounted it, and had to take the pictures.
Yeah, like the little slides and everything that they created, and you slide down in the projector that has the turnstile on the top.
Yeah. And to actually make those, like, you know, it's not like you just cut and paste on your computer back then. You had to actually physically take a picture of everything.
Yeah.
So I learned, so the process of like putting that course together, I learned a tremendous amount about, you know, the basics of being a teacher, you know, being an educator. And so I had, you know, so that was a really great opportunity, and then gave me confidence when I came back to Illinois to do more teaching as well.
Cool. Excuse me. So I didn't know that was a major interest of yours, you know, the TMJ. Is that something that you're still have a major interest in, or have your interests expanded beyond that now? Or,
well, you know, I basically, in my clinical practice, I pretty much treat whatever comes in the door, you know, right. So I'll, but I tend to specialize, but in terms of what I actually, specialize in terms of my teaching and writing and research, has been along the lines of spine, TMJ, cervical genetic headaches. That sort of thing is what I've really had an interest in for many years. So, it's still a major interest, but in terms of my actual clinical practice, it's probably 5 or 10% really, because I'm pretty much seeing everything. You know, and the other thing that happens is the longer you practice in an area, because I've been, you know, with the same practice group for over 20 years, but you know, I might have an individual who came to me for back pain 20 years ago when he was 60, and now he's 80 and he's having balance issues, you know? So, so now I'm working with him on, you know, strength and balance and just trying to keep him going, maybe right. Still working with the back a little bit on and off. But, so, you know, you develop relationships, you know, if your patients get older, as you get older,
Yeah, it's a pretty special thing when you're in a community that long and you can see, you know, those patients over that time frame, or, you know, you see their kids, or even longer, you might see their grandkids or something. That's kind of neat to be in a community like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Seen multiple generations of folks, and you know, and then I still see people that, you know, I knew growing up and stuff, since I'm close to where I grew up myself. So yeah, it's a good mix of people. So I enjoy it.
Cool. Well, I'm kind of jotting some questions down here from time to time as you're talking, because it makes me think of other things to ask you. But as you were mentioning all these different classes, it's like you were, I don't know if you call it a golden age or golden period of, you know, manual therapy. Maybe that was more of even the 70s or 80s when more things were developing. But when you were going through your education, basically, you know, in a master's program or beyond, when you were in St. Augustine, and you were having all those people come in and teach certain classes to you guys, like you said, David Lamb or Cliff Fowler, Lori Hartman, Mariana Roccobato, I think you said Steve Krause too. All those guys, if I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, if you could go back and sit in on one of those classes again, or maybe even two of those classes again, which one might you pick?
Oh, well, I really, to take it, David Lamb was probably, you know, a real highlight. I mean, a real treat to get to know him. He was just so full of life, and, you know, he's just like a big bear, you know? And, definitely if I could, you know, unfortunately he passed away, you know, probably 20 years ago or so, maybe even longer. But yeah, to have an opportunity to take another class with him would be great. And he really, you know, back in those days, with Stanley Parris's program, he really did not, we didn't really do a whole lot of thrust manipulation techniques, through the early, you know, period of the training. You know, basically you would have to go all the way through a manual therapy certification before you could then go to the thrust course, because he really wanted to make sure that, you know, there was a certain level of skill and safety with the students who were going to learn the thrust techniques. So it was really very, very cautious in that way. So then he would have, you know, David Lamb come in and teach the thrust course. So it's like you had to climb the mountain a little bit in order, before you could take that class. But then, yeah, you know, and David was just a very skillful, you know, manipulator, you know, just had great hands and was just, you know, a lot of fun to take a class with. So, yeah, if I could go back, I'd love to take another class from him.
That's cool. Yeah, I've heard wonderful things about him as an individual and even a clinician. You know, he has awards named after him for a reason, right?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of neat to hear that. So kind of moving on to some other questions. I know you were saying some different interests that you had at one point, especially with TMJ. But since you're still practicing, you're part of a private practice group, given how long you've been a manual therapist or even a physical therapist, what still excites you about going to work every day and continuing to treat patients?
Well, you know, I think what I really enjoy is trying to translate the evidence into clinical practice, and then figuring out what really works, and then, you know, kind of throwing some stuff out and then keeping other pieces of it. And, you know, probably most recently is just trying to, I think sort of the ongoing challenge is to, kind of to get better at how I speak to my patients and how I educate them, mm-hmm. and how I, try to help them understand their condition, maybe how I motivate them, you know, 'cause all of that is really kind of a little bit of the art of what we do, and trying also to look to the science of, you know, what are we supposed to be saying, or what sort of things should we stay away from in terms of our explanations? Are we doing harm with how we're explaining what we think might be wrong, or, you know, so trying to, you know, most recently trying to integrate some of the pain science stuff into the manual therapy and figuring out how do you mesh that on a day-to-day basis without, you know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, you know, so that's kind of the daily challenge, really, you know. So spend my weekends reading the research, and then my weekdays, you know, trying to apply it, and then, you know, coming at the end of the week and thinking, You know, some of it worked and some of it didn't. And then how do we integrate it, you know, going forward? So, so that still makes it fun and interesting, you know?
Yeah. I think that's pretty powerful too. Cause I mean, who I would consider a master clinician clinicians that I've been around, whether, you know, being directly mentored by them or just seeing them operate in a clinic, that art form that you spoke about of how they interact with the patient, not just, you know, what they do to them or what they learn from an evaluation, that interaction piece is pretty huge. And thankfully it's becoming more recognized of how important it is. But I think when you're younger or you're trying to learn certain things or techniques and you're trying to get good at them, you know, that occupies your mind to some degree, but you can't let that overtake, you know, what you do with the person and how you interact with them. So
right.
I think that's a nice point that you make.
When you're young, you're sort of looking for that magical technique, you know, and I think certainly I was on the quest for that Holy Grail for a number of years, but you know, after a while you realize, gee, you know, a lot of these techniques are kind of similar and, you know, you could probably tweak them here or there and, you know, it's always good to keep working on your handling skills, and that's fine. But it's really like, how do you present it to the patient? How do you interact with the patient? How do you connect with people? You know, that's a lifelong pursuit, you know. Right. So, and I've had some young therapists come into my clinic that had taken a lot of courses, knew a lot of techniques, but, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe needed a little bit of help with just, let's just slow down a little bit and get to know the patient, you know, let's see how right. we connect with them. And that, you know, there's a lot of power in that in terms of really helping people.
Yeah. Don't forget that you're working with a person.
Exactly.
Not just a shoulder or a knee or a low back or something like that.
Yeah. Right.
And that's one thing I try and make an effort to do with patients. It kind of check in with them periodically going, you know, how you doing? How's this activity that you're having difficulty with? Is there anything else that you'd like to get better with, you know, we can help you get better with? And yeah, you know, I just thought about this the other day and, you know, bring up that kind of thing. And it's kind of nice when you see a smile get on their face and you go, no, I'm pretty good. You know, mm-hmm. and they're happy with where they're at. So that's a special thing to, you know, affirmation, I guess, that patients are happy with where they're at and you had a hand in it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it makes it worth getting up in the morning, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So are you currently going through and doing mentorship in your clinics? Do you guys have a residency program or anything like that, that you're running through where you're at?
We have some, you know, ongoing mentorship that I myself and some of the other experienced therapists kind of do with the younger therapists, but we're not really part of a organized residency or fellowship. I have had some therapists who are enrolled in a program come and do some of their hours with me. Okay. And I've gone to their clinics. And I have in the past have therapists who work for me who have gone through a residency or fellowship program. The difficulty we found when we were trying to do that on a consistent basis is that just the whole idea of having somebody come into a small private practice for a year and then leave.
Oh yeah.
To make room for the next guy. Yeah. You know, if you're going to really keep it going, it's a 1 year experience, like, and then you leave and the next guy comes in. And, you know, with a community based private practice that's up against lots of competition, and we really kind of keep ourselves going by our relationships within the community. We just can't really do that, you know, yeah. with the size of our practice. So we have, you know, there's a total of 11 therapists. Some of those folks are part-time, but the thing about our group is that everybody's committed to the community. You know, everybody's involved in community activities. We all live in the community. And that's what really helps keep it going. So it makes it hard to, you know, have a model where we're going to rotate people in and out, you know, because you just start introducing somebody to the community and then they leave, you know.
Right.
So that's really kind of the challenge with running something like that through a private practice. So
when you do get to mentor other clinicians, are there any particular things, I'm sure that always depends on the individual in front of you that you're mentoring, but are there any common themes that you notice that you end up kind of emphasizing for most people that you're in a mentoring role with?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of what we talked about earlier. It's just because oftentimes the type of therapist who's going to, be motivated to push through a residency or fellowship program is usually a pretty good student. And, they've got, kind of the basics down pretty well. And they're, I'm really interested in manual therapy. So, there's always some things you can kind of fine tune with that. But kind of where they probably need the most help is just like tuning into the patient and, asking the right questions and sort of asking the right follow-up questions. And, some of those skills, I think, for the expert clinician, that's kind of where the development oftentimes lies is with that that interaction with the patient.
Good to hear. So when you do get to mentor those other people, what are some things that you hope those younger clinicians learn from you or kind of take away from their time with you, whether that's just regular interaction on a semi-personal level or just professional mentoring role? Like, what do you hope that they take away from your time with you?
Well, hopefully they come away with as better clinicians themselves, and take seriously that interaction with the patient and kind of get to know each individual patient. But also, I hope that they, at some point we'll probably have some conversations about just professional association involvement and the importance of being involved in the profession and kind of giving back to the profession and to the community, So, it's a kind of a focus of mine to be involved in not only professional associations, but also community organizations and sort of being that hopefully a role model so other people get involved in those sort of activities as well.
Yeah. And kind of to dovetail on that a little bit, you mentioned earlier how you were involved with an organization like IFOMPT. I can't remember if you actually mentioned IFOMPT or not, but I'll mention it now. And that your current role is president. I thought you've also had a role with the American Academy as well, but I cannot remember specifically what that role was. So forgive me for that, but can you kind of shed some light on what you're up to right now in that role or what you have done in the past for the American Academy or even, APTA?
Yeah, well, the in some ways it's parallel sort of my education and clinical career, because actually when I was in St. Augustine, American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists was being formed, and Stanley Parris was one of the founding members. We had the advantage of hearing about this from Stanley. So he'd go to the meetings with the other founding members and then come back and tell us about it, the next day or the next week at our staff meeting. So we were kind of, being tuned in to what was happening as this new organization was forming. Stanley actually organized and planned the 1992 IFOMPT meeting in Vail, Colorado. He pretty much put it on single-handedly with his organization. Wow. And so myself and Elaine Lonneman were able to go to that meeting and help, so we were kind of checking name tags at the door and, picking up tables and, helping speakers or whatever needed to be done. We were just, there to work, but we also had a chance to meet people like Jeff Maitland and Freddie Kaltenborn and people like that who were at that meeting. So, and that's actually when AOMP became a member of IFOMPT. So, right. So I was kind of peripherally involved, or there kind of during those history-making events. And then when I finished with University of St. Augustine, when I got done with my master's in the program, the manual therapy program, I moved back to Illinois. In 1995, at the combined section meeting was in Reno, and it was the first time when the founding members invited the new fellows to join them. So I was one of the first group of new fellows who were accepted into AOMP. There's about 20 of us or so. So they invited us to a meeting, and so at that meeting, they wanted to elect two new members to the executive committee. They wanted, you know, somebody out of that new group to volunteer to be on the executive. And so Stanley nominated me, and I ended up being elected to the executive committee of AOMPT. So I was 29 years old, you know, just out of my master's degree program, you know, a new baby at home, and now I'm on the executive of an organization. And Jim Rivard was the other person who got elected at that point. So so that was, you know, Joe Farrell was the president, and so I'm on, you know, the executive. And back then things were done with faxes and telephone calls, and we'd get together, you know, for meetings once a year. And so it was a great learning experience, you know, to be a part of that. And so the academy was just forming and gradually growing, and, you know, we had some growing pains along the way. But so I was on the executive for, I think, about 10 or 11 years, and ended up being president for the last three. So then when I was president, I represented AOMP to IFOMP, you know, so that was my first real experience with IFOMP. So I was able to go to the 2004 meeting in Cape Town as the delegate to IFOMP. And, you know, so that was a good, you know, that was my first big international trip and first real, you know, experience with IFOMP other than being in that 92 meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, I went with a couple of motions, a couple of things I wanted to try to pass from the American perspective, and they got voted down and defeated. And I walked away from that thinking, oh, those were nice people. But, you know, I realized that we hadn't really laid the groundwork to really have an influence with IFOMP, because in the U.S. we were really so occupied with trying to develop our own organization that we weren't a very active member of IFOMPT at that point. Oh, okay. You know, in that first 12 years or so, we were going, like I said, we were kind of going through our own growth pattern and, you know, just trying to get, you know, our own systems under control and figure out how we were going to interact with the orthopedic section, the APTA. And, so, you know, through all that, like I said, we didn't really take our role at IFOMPT all that seriously. So, as I finished up as president, I thought, well, you know, maybe I should get more involved in IFOMPT. And, you know, so I kind of kept my eyes open for the opportunity. And then in 2008, I was elected to the executive of IFOMPT. So I was on the I was an executive member for two four-year terms. And then now I've been president for the last 3 years. Yeah, so it's been about a 25-year process.
Yeah, I think about, you know, as you know, new graduate out of school, and I have I've had some pretty influential people in my career, especially in grad school. Lisa Saladin was one. You know, was the vice president for the APTA, and Dave Morissette is another one. He's involved with the American Academy as well, and I mean, being in that environment, you can't help but want to be involved in all these organizations. And I haven't taken that leap yet. But you know, to hear them speak when I was younger, and then to get to talk to, you know, people like yourself or Jim Rivard or Bill Boissonnault, even Stanley Paris, when I got to talk to him, I mean, it's like you can't help but, you know, be inspired to want to go get involved and be active in your own profession.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and one of the things that was really a tipping point for me to get more involved, I mean, I certainly had a little nudge, you know, from Stanley and, you know, and kind of had the support of, you know, my wife and to kind of, you know, take the step, you know, through that opportunity. But then I think it was like 1998. I was teaching this one course for Stanley at that time. So for about 7 or 8 years, I was one of his S1 instructors. So the basic spine course through University of St. Augustine. At that point, it was a 5-day course. And so anyhow, I was scheduled to teach this course in Little Rock, Arkansas. And just a few months prior to that, Arkansas had passed a new practice act where they got direct access, but they negotiated with the chiropractors and gave up
manipulation, right?
Manipulation, yeah. And so I was going to go to Arkansas and teach this course that had the word manipulation in the title. And so they objected, and the chiropractors saw the ads and objected to that, and went to their attorney general to try to seek a restraining order to keep us from coming in and teaching that course. So Stanley negotiated with them to say that we could, a compromise to let us come in and teach the course. But the compromise was that they were going to record everything that I said. And also two chiropractors could audit the course, to make sure that I wasn't actually doing manipulation, because we actually weren't teaching thrust techniques. They were non-thrust techniques, but we used the term mobilization and manipulation interchangeably, and we used the word manipulation to describe what we were doing. So anyhow, I showed up in Arkansas, and there's two chiropractors at the course, and they had a audio professional guy come in and put a lapel mic on me and was recording everything that I said, and I couldn't use the word manipulation for 5 days. I had to use the word mobilization instead.
Mobilization.
Because, in their practice act, they could do mobilization, but not manipulation. In it, but actually the definitions actually overlap a tremendous amount.
I was just thinking, you must have caught yourself so many times, about to say manipulation, go, mobilization.
So after the third day, I think the morning of the fourth day, they didn't show up. And I thought, oh, great. They've given up. Everything's good. But towards the end of that day, the administrator from the hospital, it was actually a large hospital in Little Rock that co-sponsored that course. She came into the course at the end of the day and said, well, they've been back at the attorney general's office trying to seek a restraining order to keep you from finishing the course because they feel like what you did is manipulation, that you are breaking the practice act by what you're teaching. And so they said, stay close to the phone. The judge may want to talk to you. But later that evening, we actually got the call that it was thrown out by the judge because of due process concerns, because they named both myself, University of St. Augustine, and the hospital all in this suit for the restraining order. But we weren't able to have enough time to get attorneys to represent all of us there. So the judge just threw it out and said, let them finish the course. And they came back. The chiropractors came back that fifth day and sat in on the last day of the course. And, I had a few strong words, in my closing for the course about how we will be back to Arkansas to teach more of these courses. So they sent me a kind of a nasty follow-up letter afterward, basically saying, we'll use all legal resources to keep you from ever coming back here and teaching again. But anyhow, just having that experience of if you experience having something taken away from you, that you've been trained to do, and not being able to use language to describe what you do, it makes you appreciate it more, So I came out of there and I was like, wow, I wonder what's going on in Illinois with our practice act and our legislative committee. And, is there anybody involved who knows anything about these manipulation issues? So I came back to Illinois and I volunteered for the legislative committee. And a year later, I was chair of the legislative committee. And pretty soon we were having some conflicts over, some of these issues in Illinois. And I was right in the thick of all that. And also kind of on a national level, it's like, okay, how can I help? So I got involved with manipulation task force through the APTA and, and continued on in my role within AAMPT. And it just lit a fire under me, even though I was kind of doing some of this stuff. But, at that point, they kind of picked the fight,
Yeah.
So I came back came back fighting. So,
well, I was going to say too, I know that you know, teaching courses is one thing, but, I also feel like I got to bring up at some point, I know you've written a book, right? Manual Physical Therapy of the Spine.
Yes.
It's a pretty special book. I know because of your influence in kind of the education aspect and the administrative side and all these other things, there's a lot of people who know your name, right, from some way or another, that if they're involved in the profession at all and on the professional level, that American Academy or IFOMT or otherwise. But, you know, if there were one or two things that people remembered about you, you know, once you're done professionally in the world of, you know, manual therapy, what might you pick? Because you think about, you know, back in the day when Dr. Ciriax was alive and, you know, he wanted to be known for, from what I was told, you know, for differential diagnosis, you know, for achieving that or at least bringing that to more of a forefront. For yourself, is there anything that you hope that people remember about you?
Well, hopefully, that I have had a passion for the profession, and I tried to put the needs of the patient first and try to, you know, put my efforts into things that would help us do a better job with our patients on a daily basis, you know, because that's really where the rubber meets the road, I guess, you could say. So, you know, and putting that book together really was kind of a culmination of, you know, just developing some teaching materials through the years, because there really wasn't a good book that I could use to teach when I started to teach. And so I just started developing my own teaching materials. And then, you know, I also got involved with a group that was, you know, one of the things we wanted to do was try to make sure that thrust manipulation techniques were taught in the entry level programs. And that was partially because there was so much evidence coming out of their effectiveness, but also because to defend manipulation, it needs to be taught in the entry level to really, like, when you're up against legislative challenges, they're going to look to the entry level education to see really what defines your scope of practice. So if it's not being taught in the entry level, it's really difficult to defend that. So that was one of my main initiatives as president of, when I was president of AOMP, was let's get to work on this. And so we put together a task force and worked with the APTA and the orthopedic section to get the right people involved. This culminated in developing this manipulation education manual. And then we developed workshops and went around the country and taught workshops to clinical instructors and academic instructors to give them the resources they needed in order to incorporate teaching thrust manipulation in the entry-level programs. I'm getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, but
I love tangents. Go right ahead.
It kind of ties together, you know, some of the stuff I may be most proud of is some of that work and working as part of the, you know, a team of, you know, people like Steve McDavid and Bill Boisnault and Bob Rowe, who, you know, kind of helped in some of these efforts to sort of defend our practice, but then also try to elevate what we're doing in terms of education in the area of manual therapy in the entry level, because it is tied. They are tied together, you know, in terms of in the legislative arena. So all that work kind of also made me motivated to write a book, you know, because so I have these materials. I had a great experience of working with all these experts across the country in we kind of define in that manipulation education manual, you know, kind of here's basically what should be included. It's like, okay, I've got all, how can I take this a step further, you know, and make a product that people could really use and help enhance their teaching. So that was, you know, the first edition. And then the second edition came out in 2016. And, you know, I think that was a little bit better, just in terms of better look and, you know, just upgrading things. And and now I'm going through the painful process of working on the third edition.
Oh, so wow.
It's tough to kind of come back to it, but but it also ties into what I was saying earlier, that process of like looking at the evidence and then trying it out in the clinic and then coming back. And then the next step is, okay, then what should I put into my teaching? What should I put into the book? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a challenge, but it's kind of an exciting process to be able to kind of keep that going. So it motivates me to keep trying.
That was one of the things I was going to ask about you. And it's like, gosh, you know, I have ideas and I have ideas of, you know, things I'd like to do for the future, but man, what's it like trying to write a book? that has to be a unique challenge in itself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, it kind of starts with a vision of what you want it to be, you know, what you want to accomplish with it. And I guess I have to credit Bill Boisnot, because he actually introduced me to, you know, the publisher I ended up using. You know, Bill had written several books, and I also had some help from Guy Seminole. Guy is, you know, the long-term editor of JLSPT, and, you know, kind of an interesting story there, because JLSPT had published some papers on manipulation and you know, the benefits of manipulation, and Guy saw this work we were doing with trying to make sure that manipulation was incorporated in entry-level programs. And so he contacted Tim Flynn to say, you know, see if Tim could maybe come in and teach some thrust manipulation to his students. And Tim's like, well, why don't you ask Ken Olson? He's a lot closer to Milwaukee than I am. So I'm like a 2-hour drive to Milwaukee and Marquette. Oh, okay. So Guy, you know, reached out to me, you know, this is probably 12 or 14 years ago, see if I could come up to Marquette and do some teaching up there. And, so I, you know, for about 12 years, I'd go up anywhere from 4 to 6 times a year and do some lectures and labs and work with the students. But he also gave me, through that, Guy also was doing a lot of video taping or video recording of various techniques to give it to his students as a resource. Mm. So I was able to use, and it was actually at a, they actually have a television studio, you know, where they film the student broadcast of the local news or whatever, you know, so they have a media program at Marquette.
Wow.
That he knew the people there in the studio and was able to access that. So Guy was able to kind of help facilitate bringing me in there for a couple of Saturdays where I could film all my techniques. And so, you know, the book comes with about 200 video clips of, you know, the vast majority of the techniques, and that was all filmed there. And what made it good, made it even better, was Guy's experience with kind of filming his own techniques. And so they had 3 cameras going at the same time. And then Guy was in the production studio working with the technician and kind of saying, okay, now go to this view, go to that view. Now pan in a little bit here, you know, so he was like coaching them along the way because he knew what I was going to do, you know?
Wow.
So I think it really helped with the quality of that. And, you know, and Guy certainly has, experience in as a author, you know, kind of help, he's just a good sounding board for me as I was putting it together. So I really appreciate Guy's help.
Cool. So to transition to a few other topics here, if, you know, given your long history on the administrative side with a couple of organizations, if you could challenge other people within your profession to something, to either do something or be something, what would it be?
I'd just like to see more physical therapists get involved in the legislative process, you know, just to reach out, get to know your legislators, you know, work in their campaigns, maybe, you know, just offer to be a local resource for them. And it also really helps to be involved in your community. You know, part of my ability to talk to my state representative, both the current one as well as the past one, is my, you know, 25-year history of being in a Rotarian. You know, so I every Tuesday morning I go to Rotary, and my former state rep is in the same club, and the current state rep is in the club just the town over. But you know, we do projects on the weekends, and you know, whether it's picking up garbage from a ditch or some type of fundraiser, and I'm, you know, getting to know those kind of individuals. So when legislative issues come up, I'm real comfortable talking to them about it, and they're comfortable kind of helping support, you know, where I think we should be in those various physical therapy related issues. So I think it kind of goes a little bit hand in hand. It's like, if you can get involved in your local community, I think it gives you a little bit more, you know, connections into, you know, that local political scene, and then that also can translate to being a real positive thing for the profession. So if you can stay abreast of what the issues are, and you know, involved in your state chapter, and then when the issues come up, whether it's, you know, trying to get a higher level of direct access, or protecting our right to practice manipulation, or going for dry needling changes in the Practice Act, you're in a position to do something about it, you know. So because you've laid the groundwork, you've developed those relationships, you've developed that network. So, you know, politics is a very local thing. So if you can, like I said, if you can get involved in your community, that's you're going to be a real asset to the profession that way. So that's what I'd like to see more PTs do. I'd like to see fewer of them just like, just collect a paycheck and go home, you know, and not put something back, you know, into the profession, into the community. And, you know, and I know it's hard, you know, cause I, you know, I, tried to stay, you know, I have family, I have two kids, and, you know, they're great, but, you know, and, they're in their 20s now, one's 20 and one's 24. Great kids, and when they were young, I was real involved, you know, coaching their sports teams, and you know, spending as much time with them as I could. But and I would feel bad when I'd have to go to the state chapter meeting on Saturday instead of, you know, being there for their baseball game or whatever, you know. So you miss some things along the way, but yet I think they see, you know, they see that work ethic, you know, and now I see it in them, you know. So it does, you can kind of teach them by your examples a little bit too, you know. You want to be there for them, but yet I think it's good for them to see you work a little bit as well.
Yeah. You know, I've thought about that a lot because, I'm an instructor for the Institute of Physical Art as well. And you know, the times that you leave town to go teach, or, you know, leave to go to a conference or something like that, it gets kind of hard, especially as they get older and those life events happen, and it's kind of pulling you in two different directions, and I want to stay home. And at the same time, I believe that, you know, what you were saying is got, I'm showing them by an example a certain work ethic, and you know, that those are some things are a hierarchy, and there's times where work comes second. But in a lot of instances, you know, you want to demonstrate that to your kids, and I think it's kind of nice to hear from your perspective that it all worked out okay.
And you know, and hopefully, you know, some of those extra experiences you can bring the family along once in a while, you know, if you get a chance to travel, and you know, tie on a little vacation at the end where the family meets you. And you know, so I've, you know, there are times where it pulls you away, but there might be some opportunities where you can kind of pull them in with you too. So kind of mix it, you know, finding that right balance is important.
Yeah, so. I've recently been able to do a little bit of that, so hope to do more of it in the future. So all the different things that you've, you know, experienced over the years as a professional, is, we kind of touched on it a little bit before, like you'd like to emphasize for a lot of your patients that kind of, I don't know if you call it soft side, but the personal skills when you interact with a patient. But is there anything else that you might typically like to emphasize or teach to most of the patients that walk through your door?
Well, I think, you know, I try to keep the, I think the longer I do this, the simpler I try to keep it with people, you know, in some ways, you know, I've tried to kind of get away from real detailed pathoanatomical explanations of what I'm doing or what I think is happening, you know, unless, you know, certain patients want, they pry a little deeper and then you might get into a little bit of that, but, you know, just the importance of, you know, just let's get you moving and keep you moving, you know? So it's all about, you know, motion is lotion, you know, you're going to feel better the more you move and so just encouraging a little bit more active lifestyle and, you know, kind of getting up and moving and emphasizing how you'll feel better with that. You know, it's also kind of tuning in. Might be some advice I can give them to help them sleep better. So, you know, try to get that targeted 7 or 8 hours a night. You know, that may help with their overall wellness and their pain management. You know, maybe there's certain things with positioning I can help them with, but also just trying to find what kind of works for their lifestyle to get them to move a little bit more. You know, and generally that's going to result in a better outcome. So. So I think those are some of the kind of key things that are common themes throughout the day, you know, I wish I was better at teaching people how to manage their stress, you know, because a lot of what we're seeing is, you know, people coming in and things are just kind of, you know, swirling a little bit out of control for them right now. And if we can, you know, kind of help them step back and just get a better handle on that. You know, I think we can do a lot of good there too, but those, you know, those are some of the challenges.
Yeah. I probably can't see it, but I have something written behind me of, ideas I have for a community wellness kind of presentations of basically little short presentations of how to sleep better, how to eat better nutrition wise to help your body, how to, you know, general strategies to move better, to breathe better and, you know, reduce stress levels. I think topics like that, if everybody that walked through the door got that, our jobs would be so much easier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think, you know, the evidence is starting to catch up with the importance of that stuff, you know. Yeah, so it's all good. I mean, it's and that's kind of a lifetime challenge for us to, well, and then try to incorporate it for your own, you know, your own life a little bit too. You know, we need to try to be a good example, and yeah, it's hard when you have some workaholic tendencies to still be a good example of how to create some sort of life balance. You know, so.
Right.
So you do have to. Hopefully, you have some people in your lives who kind of help you pull away from work a little bit, you know, so that you can maintain that balance. But yeah, so it's all good.
I think those are great things. Ken, if there's anything else you'd like to mention or bring up, you know, I want to kind of give you the floor if you want to, if anything comes to mind.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the time. You know, I probably didn't talk a lot about IFOMT. You know, there's some exciting stuff going on. You know, with we have our conference coming up in Melbourne in October of 2020, which would be well worth, you know, saving up and making the trip down there.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of IFOMT people also at the WCPT conference in Geneva, Switzerland, coming up here in May of 2019. And so, you know, and there's some exciting stuff going on that we're doing, just trying to kind of expand the reach of manual physical therapy as a specialty area worldwide. And so it's exciting that, you know, we're having some countries join on from South America and Southeast Asia and the Middle East, that previously those were kind of underrepresented areas. So it's been really kind of exciting to see that happen, to be a part of the group that's trying to promote this and try to just kind of grow this specialty area, you know, throughout the world. So those are kind of some fun things to continue to, you know, strive toward and to be a part of going forward.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm I was wondering of a couple of things regarding IFOMT, but I didn't know if, you know, we'd be able to have the time to ask you about them. So maybe another time we can talk to you more specifically about all things IFOMT related.
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay, cool. Well, is there? We certainly appreciate your time. We enjoyed speaking with you and getting to hear from you. Is there any place that listeners can go to learn more about you, or kind of what you're up to, or where you're at, or different things, either in the clinic or a mentoring role, or even with IFOMT?
The IFOMT has a website, a Facebook page, and a Twitter account, so you can, you know, kind of look for IFOMT online. And also, my private practice is called Northern Rehab Physical Therapy Specialist, so we also have, you know, those similar avenues for, you know, social media and online communication. So those would probably be the two places to find, you know, some of my activities.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again. I certainly appreciate your time. Hope to speak to you again soon. And thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Enjoyed it.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this conversation that we got to have with Ken Olson today. Ken is a wonderful person, as you got to hear. He's a very good clinician and does a great job in mentoring role with all the people that he's worked with before and currently. But I hope you also came away with a few tidbits of nice things that he gives insight to related to patient care, what things are really important, and other things to keep in mind when we see our patients. If you want to learn more about Ken, you can certainly look him up through the avenues that he mentioned between his clinic and IFOMT. I'd encourage all the listeners out there to go and explore the IFOMT webpage. You can see the link of it on our website. And if you don't get to go to that website, it's basically just www.ifompt.org, O-R-G. And go and explore through the website. It's a great resource. They have a number of very interesting things on there. And go check it out. There's a lot of important issues going on, not just in our own country, but around the world, that I think would be very good for people to know about and keep up to date on. Otherwise, if you guys have any suggestions for me, it's always welcome. Please let me know either on the website page or any of the social media accounts. By all means, if you want to help us out and spread the word, please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher and let everybody out there know what we're up to, or share it on social media or give us a comment. We always love to hear from everybody, and it really helps us out to figure out what we're going to be doing programming-wise. Otherwise, thank you all for listening as always. Hope to hear from you soon. If not, be on the lookout for what we're coming out with. Thanks.